around the world on International Shortwave, online at radiodisclosure.com, and on the Radio Disclosure Radio Network. I'm your host tonight, Matt Aaron. And folks, tonight's going to be an interesting night. You need to put your creativity hat on here, your thinking hats, because this is an interesting topic. This was passed to me from a friend, Life on Mars. Guy I got tonight, Jerry Lehane, he's going to tell us how we can find the information to find life on Mars. I know that sounds crazy, but you know, I've been up to his little photo directory here, and he's going to have to give out the URL if he wants to, but he sent me the link here, and I'm going through this stuff. There's all kinds of stuff. There's fossils. It's quite amazing. So, Jerry, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get on to the whole life on Mars deal, because you know, if the audience doesn't know who they're talking to, it's
It's tougher. I'm a pretty average guy. I'm age 62. I'm a lifelong Delawarean, so I'm in Joe Biden country, actually, even though I'm not a supporter of him. But I am a ghostwriter and just a pretty typical guy. My day job is doing grass cutting, painting, house painting, stuff like that. I do that to keep physically active because if you don't, then you start to lose it. And I'm a little younger body-wise, but more, I would say, mentally. I think I'd be a late bloomer. That's probably the best way to describe it. But anyway, I ghostwrote for Star Trek, Howard Stern, and a lot of classic rock stuff. I ghostwrote from mass media. My great year was 1987 when I was 29, 30. And so now I'm 62. But I even ride a bike for exercise. So keeps a little bit of stress off the knees, off the joints. My typical day today was just painting, and yesterday was doing some gravel for a driveway, and tomorrow it will be doing some asphalt paving stuff. So the physically active thing, I think, keeps you mentally awake, too. My dad was a scientist who worked for Hercules Company, a division of DuPont, so he tested plastics, and he kind of hated that, but he also had a school bus company, so I drove school buses for a while, and I had my most creative writing period and creating period when I was a school bus driver, believe it or not.
So how does an average guy like yourself, school bus driver, grass cutter, all these different things, get to the point to where you're finding life on Mars?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a long journey to that, but I'll go backwards. I use the NASA sites, the JPL NASA images, and they're in black and white mostly. So I started doing that in 2004. I found life on Mars in 2004 after the Spirit and Opportunity rovers landed, and I designed those back in 1987. So for me, a common, ordinary guy who doesn't travel much, I've only been to L.A. once. That was in 86. I've been to, like, Miami, Florida. In 86 I was in L.A. In 76 I was in Miami. I've been to New York about 50 times. I've been to Philadelphia about 100 times. Philly's pretty close to Delaware. Most of our media comes from Philadelphia, put it that way. So if I have any accent, it's kind of Delaware, Philadelphia.
Gotcha. So when you say you developed the rovers.
Yeah, I'm an artist. Drawing. Yeah, so I think I had art in mind for a career when I was in high school. I didn't like academics so much. I was in a Catholic school, didn't like religion that much. So I was in kind of a different environment where I thought I was in my own head a little too much. So I gravitated towards music and art, you know, kind of shut off from, you know, a few friends I had and kind of a typical upbringing, but wasn't into sports that much. Didn't like that too much. Didn't take many science classes. Steered away from math, so I had the reader-writer kind of skills and the artistic hand skills and things like that. So I decided that if I was going to not be able to travel but still get to the mass media, I had to figure out a way. And it turned out that music was the way. And the odd thing about that is I can't read music. I don't play guitar that well or anything. I can sing pretty damn well, and I can even imitate guitar sounds with my voice, and that's what I would do on four-track tape for, like, real musicians, like the Tom Petty, Roy Orbison, George Harrison, Robert Plant, Soul Asylum, STP. But I started out with a local band. It was a guy that I met in college in a poetry class, and that was in 82. His name was Tommy Conwell, and he is a Philadelphia musician. So I wrote his first MTV hit. It was called I'm Not Your Man in 1985, and that was my first MTV song. So anyway, with Tommy, I had access to a four-track, and his bass player set me up with a four-track, and they would leave me alone, so I would write songs for them. And then I said, well, you know, it's all free and everything. I just want you to do the songs, but here, I want you to get these other songs to these bigger artists, but I want you to keep absolute secrecy because I kind of don't want it to get out. You know, that way nobody can sabotage it, nobody knows about it or whatever. So it's kind of going through the back door. So with it, I included, can you get these to the right people? And he said, yeah. And I go, okay, this is some Star Trek stuff. This is some other stuff. This is for, I created Predator. So if you've seen the movie Predator, that came out in 87. That's the same year that they saw it on my pages. So
That's quite interesting. So the drawings that you did of the rovers, how do they wind up in the hands of NASA, I wonder?
Right. Yeah. So you have to think, okay, this guy in Delaware, how is he going to get to NASA, JPL NASA? Well, my initials are JPL, Jerry Patrick Lehane. I designed the JPL logo that you see on Mars on the rovers, and they stuck with it. So I got my artwork to JPL NASA through Gene Roddenberry from Star Trek, because he loved, and I mean loved, the stuff that I sent him in 87, because he was just starting up Star Trek The Next Generation, and he only lived until, I believe, 91, and so you figure from 87 to 91, he only saw, you know, some of the results of my ghostwriting for him. But I really aimed to please him, and I even made his wife one of the characters in two series, maybe three, Voyager, DS9. So I created DS9, the outlines. Now you have to think, what am I doing on loose leaf page? I'm putting outlines in this master science fiction guy's head. You know, handwriting, carefully hand-printed, not script-style writing, but, you know, the old-style print writing, so it's easily legible. And doing drawings of those big-eared Ferengi guys and the nasty-looking Borg and the Cardassians and things like that. So Gene Roddenberry was the key to finding life on Mars, because he passed on my drawings to NASA.
That's interesting. So, life on Mars. Talk about that for a second. I'm looking at all of these different, these different things. Obviously, I mean, to the average person, as you're looking at this, you would say, man, this, you know, everyone knows of, you know, the pyramids on Mars, and then they supposedly flew something else over and said, oh, well, that was just shadows, you know, and all these, yeah, all these different things. So I guess the question I want to pose is if there is life on Mars and there is a large cover up, why would they post these photos of the real Mars and not fake ones, I guess?
Okay, well, you're skipping ahead for me a little bit, but it's good that you ask that, because for the listener, I'm going to guess that these listeners are way more educated than your average listeners, and they're going to realize that military NASA controls what you consider regular NASA. The black budget of NASA goes to the military. They control a lot more. The science NASA is left in the dark, and on top of it, a non-disclosure agreement. They have a non-disclosure agreement. So a lot of times they're not told of the life on Mars, but they really know, but they have to keep it quiet. They see what I see in many cases, and an example of that is when they zoom in on a dinosaur baby fossil on the 10th day of the landing of Opportunity. And this dinosaur fossil is in a crater wall 20 feet away from the Opportunity rover landing. So, in other words, it's a hole-in-one. It's an astronomical hole-in-one, because this rover, I designed the bags, the airbags, for the rover to bounce around in. And then it bounces, ends up in a crater, comes up 20 feet away from dinosaur fossil in the side wall of this crater. So when the rover gets off on the 15th, between 10 and 15th day, it rolls up with what I designed, but I only draw the thing. I don't have to scientifically engineer it. It's called a micro imager, basically a little microscope on the end of an arm. So it zooms in on these dinosaur baby eggs, some hatchlings, and it shows the lizardy skin.
We're going to come back to lizardly skins, I think.
Yeah.
That's, ladies and gentlemen, life on Mars, lizard skins. What do you think? I'm already got goosebumps. We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron, your host, and I got Jerry Lee Haynes with us. Guys discovered fossil records on Mars. He's talking about lizards on Mars in the fossils. This is incredible. Quick question, Jerry. Is there a place where people can go online to see some of this information and find it to where they can look at some of the stuff we're talking about right now?
Yeah, sure. I posted 200 pictures on a site called DeviantArt.com. That's DeviantArt, art, all one word, .com. And my search name would be Jerry Lee Hain 3, and that's JerryLeHane, and the number 3. So that's all one word, Jerry Lee Hain 3. Lee Hain, pronounced like Hanes underwear, I tell people.
You gotcha. So talk more about these fossil records. This is like, you started on this, we came up to a break. Man, I am just grinning from ear to ear.
Well, yeah, it happens that if you go directly to the NASA site and look at Opportunity pictures from day 10 to 15, that would be in 2004, February, and look for the micro imager pictures, you will find a hatchling baby dinosaur with lizardy skin. You will see little eggs, and you will see the egg-laying mechanism called an ovipositor. That's the organ that lays eggs on the back end of a dinosaur. The dinosaur was, the mother was about 10 to 15 feet long. I can't tell exact scale, but it's in that region. And it was, I believe, one of the long-tail dinosaurs, like not like a T-Rex, but more towards those skinny, smaller ones that you see in Jurassic Park that ran around like sprinting all over the place. That style, a little longer back legs than front legs, but still not like the tiny T-Rex legs in the front. And you can't really make out a lot of the body, but you see more, impressions in the rock and things, and you have to put two and two together and know what you're seeing. But my point is that the drivers of the rovers knew exactly what they were looking at, exactly what they were zooming in on, and they did not disclose. So it's a situation where the military shuts down any kind of information outflow about real life on Mars. They keep it down to, oh, we found salt water. Oh, we found this magnesium or something, methane. Oh, boy, great big excitement. No, there's large life. There's people 5 foot tall. There's animals smaller than ours, mostly similar, highly evolved. So if you would go to the deviantart.com, Jerry Lee Hayne 3, you'd see 200 pictures, and a lot of them are colorized because that's the thing. Being an artist, it actually becomes a disadvantage because people don't see what I see. I look for eyes, nose, mouth, faces. I've studied faces all my life. I've collected mounds and mounds of pictures from out of magazines, studied faces, animals and people, but mostly people. But it turns out that I've seen way more animals than people, and they seem to come from a compound a lot of times, like a parade, and different species. So that's how I know they're highly evolved. They'll come out and ride each other as if it's a parade and a game to them. They'll jump on the rover, they'll lick it, they'll bite it, they'll climb all over it, they'll look at it really strangely and get their picture taken. And the way that you know that they're alive is both eyes are focused on the rover because they're getting shot with a focusing laser beam, which is a red beam in your eyes. If you know those old-time video cameras that would shoot a red beam in your eyes to focus, that's what they're getting. So deer in the headlights kind of look. And there's all kinds of animals.
Yeah, I see up here on this site, you've got frog-looking, you've got like this large-looking, and it's weird-looking, like it's got one, two, three, it's got four legs, looks like a blob out into the horizon, but as you zoom into it, it's clearly got four legs. I mean, it's, this is amazing. So do you think this life is intelligent, or do you think it's just so perhaps that this life is just there?
It's absolutely intelligent because there's an anti-gravity style, small car sized, I would say a jet plane without wings. That's how I can tell it's anti-gravity. It has no wings, but it's like a nose cone shape. It's like smaller than a compact car, like a Camry or a whatever. But it has a nose cone shape. And there's three boys that are laying out in front of it that are dead, laying in the same direction, about 100 feet away. And that was on day 105 Spirit Rover. So 105 from January, 105 days, I don't know, roughly 4 months. That would have been in the summer of 05, I guess. No, I'm sorry, in 04. It was in the year 04, but it was day 105, and I've done drawings of it and close-ups of the faces of the dead boys and noted that they have just light clothing. Now, here's the thing about Mars that I write in my tweets. I tweet at J3 Lehane. That's J, the number 3, L-E-H-A-N-E. And I just post all kinds of Mars pictures to people. I tell them, don't be afraid to unfollow me if it becomes too much of the same old thing for you, because I'll just keep daily posting Mars pictures to people. I have been doing this since 2004, and then I got offline in 2012. Anyway, the people are skinny, mostly 5 foot tall, and they wear light clothes. They wear no spacesuits. They wear no breathing devices. Likewise, the animals, no spacesuits, no breathing devices. Even the smaller people, some of them, the tiny people, are naked, completely naked. And that makes me think that the climate is warm. And when I see people walking around with no clothes on, I think, well, that's a warm climate to me, you know.
Yeah. So you think they're intelligent based upon what you see in the pictures?
Yeah, they wear hats. One wore like a almost like a navy cap looking thing. I haven't seen too many implements and tools that I can clearly recognize other than like water screws, broken off parts of, I guess, buildings. But the thing is, there's people that see things way better than I do, and they've got better tools, and they're on YouTube. One guy is called Art Alien. So if you look up the word Art Alien, or a guy I've used his picture most recently, is called Oasis Cree, and that is spelled Oasice, second word, Cree, K-R-I. And in his number 20 video was the best ever face that I've seen so far on Mars. Most clear, most distinct, undeniably human face. So that is Oasis Cree, YouTube, episode 20. His titles are like Mars Ruins. So he mostly looks at the, and Art Alien, mostly look at the surface, and they're not necessarily looking for humans as much as buildings and things. And I just don't have as much experience with that. So,
well, you've got a bunch of rocks that have faces built into it. Like, the more that I'm looking at what you have here, I'm starting to wonder if there was not a really advanced culture or multiple mm-hmm. advanced cultures on Mars. And was some kind of war, some kind of battle or climate change, something that they did themselves to destroy their planets.
Probably both war and climate change. The surface is pretty barren as I see it, and for us, there's a huge advantage to that in a very weird way, and I just figured it out last year. They have such a thin atmosphere that they get so much radiation on a daily basis that their humans and animals in their DNA would have some fighting mechanism to fight cancer, skin cancer, all kinds of other cancers. So I think their DNA can lead to the cures for cancer, because just imagine if we lived on Antarctica, okay, and we had very little coverage from the atmosphere or the top of the Himalayas, where we were getting just dosed continually with solar radiation and cosmic radiation. And that they must have something for that. Now, the downside of that is there's a lot of hybrids, and there's some really Dr. Moreau kind of weird-looking animals. Maybe you didn't get to that part of the pictures, but there's some weirdness there. and I push them too. Like some things that look half human and half animal. There's lots of that.
That's interesting. The more that I think about this, the more that I go through with it in my mind. Mars having an advanced culture that could have destroyed itself, could have done something to itself to cause their own demise and own destruction. That scares me. It kind of makes me wonder about where we are on our planet today. We're going to continue with Jerry. And folks, go up to the site. I'm going to put a link on radiodisclosure.com to where you can find some of these photos as well, and put a link to his art gallery here. This is crazy. When I come back, I want to ask Jerry a couple of interesting questions about how he feels where we are as a culture compared to maybe even where Mars was. He has a creative mind, wrote for Star Trek and many other things. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron. We got Lee Haynes and folks. An advanced culture. The evidence points to an advanced culture living on Mars. And especially an advanced culture that had much more than what they had before. And Jerry, you are a creative writer. You've done all kinds of stuff in your life. And I guess the question I'm going to pose is, if you were to use your creative mind and you were to use your creativity to figure out, we kind of touched on this before, but I mean, you look at the vastness of Mars, and you look at the desert that just surrounds it, the almost nothing, but there's so much there. Even in the pictures that you found, I mean, you're saying like day one, as soon as the thing landed, they found something. It's like, it's almost like a scene out of the game Fallout. And it's kind of like, you don't see the buildings, or maybe you do. Maybe we just landed in a spot you can't. What do you think happened to these people?
That's hard to say immediately, but let me back up a little bit. I probably didn't disclose to you that the pictures are doctored by the time that we get to them, and a lot of evidence of life is exited out of them deliberately, and I believe that's by the military. The scenario I had for a long time was they download the Mars pictures in a military base in Australia, way in the outback, and that way they doctor them. They'll blur things, they'll darken things, they'll try and eliminate the signs of life, because the military wants to keep that in their hat so that they can get the technology first, so that they can get there first, get that technology, for instance, anti-gravity. And I have to assume that there's this population that lives probably mostly underground, and I don't have the proof of that, but I know that there are caves and a lot of animals live in the caves. And there is one special picture that I came across this year that really opened my eyes, and this is called Mars Crabzilla, Crabzilla. If you were to look up the picture on a Google search, Mars Crabzilla, you'll see, since 2000. Between 2015 or 17, when it was posted, I only got back online in the beginning of this year, and I saw that, and I was like, "That's not a crab, that's little people." And millions of people saw it, but right in front of them was the evidence of people on Mars. And then, if you look at what appears to be a crab, now crabs don't go vertical on a cave wall. So you know something's screwy there. What it is just three people bunched up together trying to get down a hill, and their arms and legs are askew, and people with a reference to a crab say, oh, that looks like a crab. But it's really just three people standing, you know, one in front of the other, trying to get down a tiny slope out of a cave entrance. And to top it off, right next to them is the naked girlfriend sitting down 5 feet from them, maybe. And in her lap are the very tiny people. So she's about a foot tall, maybe 2 foot tall tops. And these tiny, tiny people would fit in the palm of your hand. And there are the naked ones, too. She's naked, they're naked, as far as I can see. So if you look up Mars Crabzilla, then you won't have to take my word for it. You'll just see it for yourself. Because there's no way I can Google and fix Google and Dr. Google for you. But it's a little hard to see the girl sitting down because it's slightly invisible. And you have to doctor that to bring up the highlight, the enhance the image to get the picture of the girl. And until you do that, then you'll see the tiny people in her lap.
That's amazing. I'm actually looking at it right now. I see it's interesting. I never realized that all this was there for Mars. That's astounding.
It's hard to see. It took me some time. I didn't see it at once. I knew that something's wrong, and I kept looking. What is that? And then I could see the little man. His arms are spread like Da Vinci, legs spread. In other words, it's a younger guy. Let's say he's 30. He's got clothes on. He's got his arms, one arm jacked up on the cave wall. He's got some elderly people behind him that have bodies that we don't even know what that is. Just think of a Mr. Potato Head. If you've seen a Mr. Potato Head, just put little tiny arms on it and little tiny legs with big cartoony looking shoes on a Mr. Potato Head, and that's what's behind him. To an elderly couple, probably male and female, I don't know, but at least two people. And they're trying to make their way down a slope, and he is just trying to make them not fall off the side of the rock, basically, at the cave entrance.
Well, what's interesting is you look at it, it's really dark in that area as well. Maybe you're saying it's a cave entrance, but the one thing that I was thinking of is maybe they got trapped out there, the sun came up, and they're trying to hide from the sun. Just looking at it's interesting, like just kind of seeing how they're all bunched up in that one area. If it is a cave, that's incredible.
Yeah, pretty sure it's a cave. It's a pretty rectangular looking opening, and it would reach the top of their head. So if somebody carved it, it would be probably for that size of individual to fit into. And the girl just seems lounging around with her little pet people in her lap. So she's much harder to see, but that's the most information I've gotten from any Mars picture on one shot. And that's from a really long distance away shot. So you really need a good blow up to see the details. And even then you'll have trouble if you don't know what you're looking for. And you just see a crab. But it doesn't look anything like a rock, because a lot of people that can't see the images I present, they just say, oh, that's just rocks. But no, they can't say this about this one.
So you said you did writing for Jane Roddenberry. How well did you know Jane?
See, I did not ever meet him. He never corresponded with me. When I say ghostwriter, I mean I freely, as a tribute, just gave him a whole bunch of handwriting, handwritten stuff, hand-drawn, and sent it in with these musician guys. And they assured me that they could get it to the right people, so I had to trust them, you know. I was doing them a big favor by writing them hit songs. So they were doing me the equally impressive favor of giving me a slice of immortality by delivering this stuff to the right people.
So the reason why I asked that question, there's two things I want to bring up. Somebody that I interviewed quite a long time ago said that a lot of Gene's inspiration came from extraterrestrial locations. The second thing I'd like to bring up is Nikola Tesla. If you know who Nikola Tesla is, Nikola Tesla is the guy that has basically created our electrical grid system from his mind. Like this guy, he died in 1943 or 46. I can't remember, but Tesla, he was the guy that invented AC current, and he invented the Tesla coil. He invented all these unique electronic gadgets. And one of the things that he claimed is that he got a message from Mars. And a guy that created basically the world that we know today. You look at Tesla and you look at what he envisioned. He envisioned wireless communication. He envisioned electricity. He envisioned sending data, you know, basically being able to do all of that wirelessly. He literally invented cell phones before cell phones were ever even thought of. And he claimed that he had a communication from Mars. Now, what's interesting is when Tesla died, he died in a hotel room in New York City. And when he did, the U.S. government came in and confiscated all of his work. All the patents, the original patents on AC current, all that was done by Tesla. And it makes me wonder, how did he know that it was just from Mars? Because to make that statement that it came from Mars, how do you know that it came from Mars? Space is pretty big. Just an interesting question. It brings up this whole life on Mars thing. I mean, this is a credible source. This is not somebody that you would just sit back and go, oh, he's a nut job. Well, he kind of created electricity as we know it today, so don't know about him being a nut job. Figured I'd ask if you knew anything about the Tesla communication from Mars.
No, I don't have any reference with Tesla, but other people have claimed that they've been abducted by aliens taken to Mars, and they describe it. And I guess if you in literature, I guess the early example is Gulliver's Travels, one of my favorite stories ever. How Swift described that there were two moons at Mars, and of course they were discovered later, maybe a century or two later, by Asaph Hall, and you know, that's with telescopes. But there are reports that people have gone there and said, just an offhanded one, and these are stories that can't be proven, the alien abducted a farmer, and the farmer goes, well, I'm familiar with cows. Do they have cows on Mars? And the aliens would show him cows. And he was happy. That made him happy. So that's what he wanted to know about Mars, and that's what they showed him.
That's weird. I have an interesting thought about alien abductions and Mars. When we come back from the break, I want to ask, and something else that you mentioned earlier, kind of just wrap it all together, just another thought to see if it's something that you've ever thought of or put together. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Radio Disclosure. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. Life on Mars, alien abduction, doesn't get any better than this. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron. Jerry Lehan is our guest. Guy's been trolling NASA for years, finding all kinds of evidence of life on Mars. Keeps keeps doing it too, and you know, that kind of makes me wonder if he's ever gotten any threats by doing that, but that's a question I'm not going to ask. But the question that I wanted to ask him, in all of your research, you brought up something that kind of blew my mind. You said that the aliens on Mars would have incredible, absolutely incredible resistance to radiation, making cancer and all these different things that radiation affects, and, you know, genetic manipulation with radiation, so on and so forth, kind of makes them immune to that. And if that's the case, I wonder if the aliens that have visited us, that Linda Moulton Howell talks about and all that, where there's, you know, the cows that are taken, and you have half cows, and they're harvesting parts almost from these animals. It almost makes me wonder if that's not a medical research to fix problems in their culture and in their world, or is that the reason why they're here? That's why they're not, you know, making themselves known. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
I have. I'm slightly familiar with Linda Moulton Howell, and there's a guy I want to recommend named Joe Montaldo, Montaldo, and he's in New Orleans. He's an abduction specialist. He has a website that it's a sort of gathering of people that have been abducted to sort of, you know, group mind, group think, help each other out, support group, you know. So they talk about what they've experienced with the alien abductions, or just a friends kind of group. And he's been abducted, his family's been abducted. He explains that a lot of families, like, they go for the genetics of the family. That's why the same people in different generations are abducted continually throughout their life, and they don't have much choice about it. But the downside is that also the military takes those abductees and interrogates them afterwards to try and learn the secrets of the aliens' technology. So you have people that are sort of terrorized by the aliens, but the aliens have better mind-wiping mechanisms to dismiss the fears, whereas the military uses drugs that don't work so well. So the torture that's inflicted on them to get information is not easily forgotten. They can come away with wounds and, you know, just disturbing dreams that are repeating, they can't explain. So there's a lot going on. Now, let me try and get back to what you were saying. What can you pinpoint again where you're going?
The question that I was posing is the, like, where they're coming and getting cows and harvesting parts out of cows. There's been reports of cats. There's been all these different reports of body part harvesting.
Mm-hmm. That's the really downside, and that's where I'm most shaky, because this information that I'm going to tell you is most shaky, and you have to figure it out for yourself. But the short answer is that's the reptilians making food, and they can eat animal blood, but they can also eat humans, and that would be the reptilians and other so-called ascended species that we have right here, that the military bases are taken care of, and they house them and they work with them. And other countries also have their aliens in their military bases, and it's all kept quiet. Some of the things to look for if you're really into that are the tall whites. That's sort of not the top of the list, but they're more ascended species. And you have the reptilians, which are pretty reptile-y looking and big and mean and nasty, and they're the meat eaters, and they'll eat humans, they'll eat, you know, cows, things like that. The gray aliens, they seem to be the most common ones that run the show in their little spacecraft and abduct people. They're the abductors, mostly, the gray aliens, and they have henchmen of different sizes and different species. That's what I've gleaned from any kind of research that I could find on the web since 2000. And so as far as the abductions of body parts and animals and things like that, I'm guessing that it's food sources. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the really grisly part, where they actually would stir up wars like World War One, World War Two, to get dead bodies out of grave sites and things like that, and devour them.
So, out of all your research, if you were to tell somebody, not just your page, which we'll post on radiodisclosure.com, where to start their own journey on how they themselves could find life on Mars on the NASA website, what would be your suggestion?
I wouldn't start on the NASA website because, like I say, they cover it up. If you want really to get the short and quick answers, I would say go for YouTube, and you're not gonna see mind-blowing stuff so much there, but it will wake you up to more possibilities, and then you can dig further in text and still pictures. So the short answer is I wouldn't go to the NASA sites right away, because it's, like I say, it's tough to see for a lot of people.
So in
and
your...
They cover it up.
So being you're the artist that you are, and you look at some of the NASA photos...
Yeah, I'm seeing already doctored images, so it's tough to tease out some things. I forgot to mention, there, you know, in artwork, I used to go to the library in my school just for boredom, and I'd look at all the art books, and I'd see these pictures of dragons, okay, and, you know, ancient world paintings of dragons from the east, from the west. And you have a different style of dragon in the east and the west. The one with a horse face snout, long snout, they're the European ones. And in the art, they have wings sometimes. Well, just picture on Mars, they have dragons, not winged dragons, but just like snake-looking kind of dragons. And today's dragons would be maybe 5 foot long, 6 foot long, something like that. And they're very common. Some of them are even pets. So I have one picture called Mars Lady Pet Dragon. And imagine a St. Bernard-sized head on a dragon. And it's sitting next to a fossil of a woman who died. And it wouldn't leave her side, like a loyal dog. And it just died with her. So it's they have pets. Even the animals on Mars have pets. There's a tiny, it's described as Bigfoot on Mars picture. If you Google search Bigfoot on Mars, there's a tiny live female who looks a little bit human, but she's about a foot tall. And it was from Spirit Rover 2005 in a big panorama. And in her lap, she has a pet snake. Now, NASA, or the picture destroyers, wiped out the image of the pet snake, and they wiped out and blacked out her face. They gave her a black face. They made her completely black-faced so that you can't see any facial detail. What they forgot is there are other pictures that have the detail that I highlighted and posted on my pictures. So if you want to see the lady who's an animal with a pet snake in her lap, looking right at Spirit Rover, just look at my images, and you can see I have put side by side the blacked out blackface version and the real life facial detail and the giant eyes of the snake. The head is as big as her head. She's only a foot tall.
Jeez. Well, I'll tell you, this is this blows my mind. I mean, this makes me sit back and wonder about why we keep sending things back to Mars. Why haven't we been sending, you know, probes to other planets that we could, you know, gain different kind of information to? Well, maybe because there's life there and we're wanting to know more about that life and know about how we're going to get there and study this life more, or just have communication with them somehow.
That's the most important thing. Before we even go, we should have permission from them, and we should learn their languages, because people in the science community think, oh, there's the possibility that we could control their environment and make it more like ours, and terraform. That's the funniest word for me now, and I used to actually believe in it in the 1980s. Terraforming Mars, how would you do it? But no, you need their permission. You're not going to screw up their environment like we screwed up ours.
Well, and maybe, you know, they're evolved to the point to where that environment is what they want. I mean, that's... Jeez. Who are we to say that that's what we should do? I don't know.
Yeah, we need to communicate with them. That's the first step. We absolutely need to communicate with them. Our species might not be compatible with them, but when I look at them, I say they have similar DNA to us. They have smaller feet, in other words, half as narrow because of less gravity, and some similar animal types, but a lot dissimilar, and I would say more highly evolved than ours, and that indicates that they've been a long time around more than we have. They probably were, you know, living on Mars a long time before people evolved here on Earth, because Mars cooled first, and probably by, I would say tens to hundreds of millions of years, so that, you know, you have these asteroids raining down things from the sky that could help to create life in a water world.
Interesting. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Lehan, hope I said your last name right. We're going to have you back again probably in a couple months. We'll have you back and kind of go over all this again. This blows my mind. I'm convinced. Are you? I hope you are. This is Radio Disclosure. Drop me an email, matt@radiodisclosure.com. Want to thank you for listening. Thank you for WTWW for carrying us on the International Shortwave Station. And if you're listening on a local station, get you a shortwave radio, check us out on there as well. You'll love it. It's global, man. This is Radio Disclosure.